about 10 lines up from the bottom. And we were talking about cases in which Edim Zomim do not receive the penalty that they were trying to give to somebody. So we talked about going to the Ermiklat. We talked about paying kofar. That was the discussion that we had at the end last time. Is kofar atonement or is it restitution? And now we talk about sale as an Eved Ivri. That was what we were up to. And there's a machlokas as to what happens in the event that they testified that somebody was sold as an Eved Ivri. So, or, well, that's our machlokas in the Gemara. Take a look. Ve'inim karim be'Eved Ivri. They won't be sold as an Eved Ivri. So, Savar of Hamnuna le'meimar. Rav Hamnuna wanted to say that that's talking about the following case. Hani mili hecha de'islei l'didei. What we're talking about is where the defendant has the means to pay for the theft that they allege he carried out. That's what we're talking about. So demigo de ihu lo nizdavin, since he would not actually be sold, inunami lo mizdavinu, so they also aren't sold. Aval hecha de lesle lidide, but if he doesn't have money to pay for the theft that they alleged, then avagav de islahu lididhu, even though they do have the money mizdavnu, they will be sold off as an eved ivri. So let me just say it outside of this to make it a little clearer. The issue is this. We've said, I think we mentioned this last time, a person only becomes an Eved Ivri either if he's absolutely broke, has no money at all, then he can sell himself, or he steals and he can't pay for the theft.
Also broke.
Sorry?
Broke in both cases.
Well, no, but in the latter case, it's just that he can't pay for what he stole. As opposed to he has no money for food, no nothing. So in other words, he could have stolen like $1 million something or whatever. Yeah.
Used part of it.
Yeah. So in the case where they allege that somebody stole something that's worth $10,000, they, the Edim Zomim, don't have $10,000 to pay for it. But the guy they alleged had stolen it does have the money. So since he wouldn't have gone to a near miklat, because he would have paid for it if they had succeeded, therefore they don't go to your miklat either. We're not going to send them. That's what Rav Hamnuna is saying. We're not going to send them to a near miklat, even though you'd say, well, it's what they wanted to do to him, the liability for a $10,000 theft. Nonetheless, that's not going to put them in near miklat. However,
so you're assuming that they didn't know that he. That they had the money to pay?
Their knowledge doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
No. This has nothing to do with intent and everything to do with just what the result would have been.
Mm-hmm. You mean Eved Ivri, not your miklat?
Eved Ivri, yeah. Yeah, I see you and I think you're miklat because we're talking about your miklat. Sorry. You are correct. Eved Ivri. Yes.
But had they known that he had the money to pay, then their intention could not have been to send him to our miklat.
Right. But you're right. It requires a refined explanation of kasher zamam. Kasher zamam, we've been translating all along the way the words literally translate, which is as they plotted to do. It sounds like it's a function of their intent. But we're looking at it in terms of they plotted to do X, and X will have the following results. It's only that they plotted to do X. To do X meaning, in this case, to get this guy in trouble for stealing whatever it is. The result of that wasn't necessarily a part of their plot. Whether that means that they knew he had the money or didn't have the money or whatever is a second level down. Mm-hmm. It's just the primary result that's what they
the conviction, not the sentence.
Correct. Exactly right. So that's Rav Hamnuna. Rav Hamnuna says, in the event that this guy didn't have the money, then actually they would go to the Eir Miklat. That's his read of this, to which the Gemara says, why? Right after the parentheses, about 7 lines, 8 lines up from the bottom. Verleim rulei, why can't they say to him, I ant havalach, mi hava mizdavnes, ananami lo mizdavninon. If you had money, you wouldn't have been sold. We're transposing ourselves with you, right? We are in the position you would have been in. You wouldn't have been sold. If you had money, we have money. We're now in your position, so we just have to pay it off. We don't have a reason to get sold. Exactly what Baruch was saying, right? We're applying to them the crime that they put on him, not the sentence that he would have received. That's the response to Rav Hamnuna. So therefore, the Gemara says, Ella, instead of that approach, we're saying no. What Rav Hamnuna is saying is this. Sava Rav Hamnuna Lameima. Rav Hamnuna wanted to say, Hani mili hecha di islei, o lidi dei, o lidid hu. When we say they're not going to the Eir Miklat, that's when either party has money. If he has money, they're not going to the Eir Miklat because he would have paid and been done. If they have money, they're not going to the Eir Miklat because they'll say, had we been in your position, had you had the money that we have, you wouldn't have gone. Aval hecha delesle lo lidide, velo lididhu, mizdabni. But they will be sold as an eved ivri in the event that neither of them has the money. That's the idea. You know, Rav Hamnuna is trying to make this about logic. He's trying to make it all about logic. And making it all about logic, you can make the logical argument of either you wouldn't have gone, or had you had what I had, you wouldn't have gone, and therefore I shouldn't have to go. But in the event that neither of them has the money, now you've lost all your options. So at that point, you're going. Rava says, you're reading the case wrong. Amar le, not the case, but the logic. Amar le Rava. Rava says, it has nothing to do with a logical argument of he would have gone, he wouldn't have gone, he had money, they had money. It's a gzeres hakasuv, it's just a pasuk. V'nimkar b'gnevaso. The Torah says that somebody is sold off as an eved ivri for stealing if he stole. V'nimkar b'gnevaso. He is sold because he stole, because of his theft. Amar Rachmana, that's what the Torah said. B'gnevaso v'lo bizmamo. You only get sold for your theft, not for being an Eid Zomim. It's just a pasuk. Don't bother looking for logic. It's not about logic. You're only getting sold in the event that you stole. You didn't steal. You're not going to an Eir Miklat. It's straight pasuk. Forget all the other arguments. Clear? So you can now understand what I said last time from the Ravid against the Rambam. We said that the Rambam, when he comments on the Eved Ivri case, he says that it's talking about where the Edim Zomamin said this guy stole, was not able to pay, and had a verdict in the Beis Din to be sold as an Eved Ivri and just didn't actually get sold. That was the Rambam's version of this case. So the Mepharshim look at the Rambam and say, that doesn't fit at all. The wording in Rav Hamnuna versus Rava. Rav Hamnuna versus Rava, they're talking very clearly about a case in which it was just an allegation of theft. There was no Gemar Din, there was no verdict. It was like, well, what would happen if he did stand trial? So it's very difficult to fit that Rambam into this Gemara. You have to assume the Rambam is adding a case rather than explaining the Gemara's case. It just doesn't work. Okay. Which brings us to Rabbi Akiva. We had a list of four cases in which Edim Zomim don't receive the penalty that they tried to give. And then there was a fifth, and that was Rabbi Akiva. Everybody good on what we said about the sale as an Eved Ivri? Okay. So the...
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
Was that Rabbi Moon who said this? If the Edim... Just remember this. If the defendant did not have money...
Correct.
And the Edim had money... They don't get sold because
they'll say the only reason you were going to be right. sold is because you didn't have, but we do. So if you're going to swap us into your position, we're just going to write a check.
But when the defendant has money, but the Aiden Zolman do not have money,
then they'll
they
say
don't
but
get
you
sold. So this is my question.
Yeah.
So then, but they don't have the $10,000. So how do you do?
Because
how
they're
Pasher Zolman in any. They don't have the money and they don't get sold. So what do you think? Right.
So their argument is that shouldn't be brought against us. In other words, the fact of the matter is that this guy, they're going to claim, apply the penalty that he would have gotten. The penalty he would have gotten was to pay the $10,000. So we will incur a debt of $10,000 But we won't get sold because that wasn't what we were.
So they are liable for $10,000.
Oh yeah, no, they'll be on the hook for $10,000, but they're not going to get sold. They'll garnish their wages.
Oh, yeah,
their,
okay,
whatever.
Okay, but the, okay, so but they got to come up with the $10,000 over time or whatever it is.
Yeah.
That, okay, because that's not what we'll be the other guy. The other guy just paid $10,000 and
correct.
Go on his way.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So Rabbi Akiva gave us an additional case. Rabbi Akiva's case was where they admit being Edim Zomamin. My time with Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara asks, if you want to see Rabbi Akiva himself, it was the fourth wide line. Mishum Rabbi Akiva Amru Af E Mishalman Al Pi Atzman. Right? They also don't pay on their own say so, at their own word, if they acknowledged it. So my time with Rabbi Akiva. What's Rabbi Akiva's reasoning? So we first bring the easy answer. Kasavar Knasahu. Rabbi Akiva believes that Edim Zomen, the penalty for Edim Zomen, is fundamentally a knas. Uknas ein mishalim al pi atzmo. That's a flat rule across the board. You never pay a fine based on your own admission. This is the rule. It's in Bava Kama Samach Dalet. Moda b'knas potter. In the event that there is a fine you're supposed to pay, but you acknowledge that you committed whatever crime, you don't pay the fine. You just pay the regular amount, whatever restitution. You never pay the fine, right? This is a basic principle in Shas. So Amar Rabba says, you know, I can prove to you that what we're doing to them is a knas and not an actual payment of restitution. And you know it already before you even read it, right? If you didn't read the next line, you know already how you can prove that this is a knas. How in the world could Edim Zomen be restitution? See, Eitan's not here this week. This goes back to Eitan's question. How could Edim Zomen be about restitution if we say once you succeeded, you're not going to be punished? Right? It's only in the event that you didn't succeed. So it's obviously not restitution. So Amar Rabba, Teda, Shrei Lo Asu Maisa, V'Neharaginu Mishalmin. They didn't do anything, and yet they're going to have to pay or they're going to get killed. So obviously, that means that this is not about restitution. This is about a fine. That's the argument. Amar Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, I will prove it as well. Teda, sherei mamon biyad bailim, umishalman. Because the money is in the hands of the owners, no one lost any money, and yet they pay. To which the Gemara says, that was the same thing that Rabba just said. Right? You're looking at like,
yeah,
what? Funny. So yeah, no, you're with it. Take a look at the top of Gimel Amud Aleph. My Nihu. What is this? What are you saying? Mamun biad bailov. Delo asu maisa, that they didn't actually do anything. Hainu de Rabba. That was exactly what Rabba said. Yeah, you're right. Ema v'chein amur Rav Nachman. It wasn't a new statement. It was Rav Nachman agreeing. That's all he was doing. He was just going along with it. He wasn't adding anything new. And that's the idea. So on this, I brought you something on the sheet. There had to be something that wasn't just straight Gemara. So, you know, don't worry. If you take a look at the sheet, this is from Rav Elchanan Wasserman, the Kovetz Shiurim. He asks a question. B'taima de Rabbanan, right? The reasoning of the Rabbanan, the Edim Zomen Mamona, when they say that Edim Zomen is Mamona, in other words, the way it was worded was we have a list of four things, and then Rabbi Akiva adds a fifth. Right? So that must mean the Rabbanan disagree with Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva is telling me it's a knas, and therefore if they acknowledge it, they're pater. The Rabbanan must disagree with Rabbi Akiva. They must think that Edim Zomen is mamon, is restitution. So Rabbi Chanan asks, why? How in the world could you tell me that it's mamon? He says, "L'charu tamua meod, darei kol hamishalem yeser amasha hizik hu knas." He says the definition of a fine in halacha is if you pay more than the damage that you did, right? If you pay the damage you did, that's restitution. If you pay more than the damage you did, that's a fine, right? There's even an argument to be made that if you pay less than what you did, that's also a fine because you're clearly not doing restitution. That's the chatzi nezek knasa discussion. That's separate from this. He says there's no greater case of you pay more than the damage you did than Edim Zomamin. Right? That's exactly what's going on. Clear? Mm-hmm. Understood?
Mm-hmm. The Rabbanan say it's not a knas.
Sorry?
He's asking how can the Rabbanan say it's not a kanas?
Yeah. Why isn't it explicit that it's a kanas? It seems like Rabbi Akiva should be the only voice on this. Uberambam perek beis mehilchos edus. So he quotes you the Rambam in Hilchos Edus on this point. The Rambam says, well, take a look. Ein le'edim zomen, every time I see Ayin Zayin, I keep thinking about Azara, but it's Edim zomen. Ein le'edim zomen shgaga, lefi she'ein behen maisa, leficha'ch ein tzrichin hasra. The Rambam writes that since there is no maisa, since there is no deed, therefore there is no need for a warning. That's the Rambam statement. Normally, in order to be liable for something, you have to have a warning.
Aren't all witnesses sworn in to tell the truth before?
Yeah, but that's not what a hasra is. I mean, what we tell them, you're right, there is a warning that is given to them of, you know, if you're lying, and it's usually in capital cases, that's the Gemara in Sanhedrin, gives it the Mishnah in Sanhedrin, that's the famous line, right? Whoever saves, you know, saves one life, whoever destroys one life, right? That's the warning given in capital cases. But the warning that we would be talking about is the warning you say to somebody, if you do this, you are going to be in violation of this law and you will get this penalty. Mm-hmm. Like that apparently doesn't go on in Beis Din. The Rambam says there's no need to because there's no deed. To which he asks, what does that mean? So there's no deed. Okay, that means he doesn't get a warning? I mean, it may not be a deed, but it's speech and it's going to get him into trouble. So the Rav Elchanan asks, Ve'enu muvan, this is not clear. Matam yesh bazeh, delafi she'en behen maisa, lefichach yischaivu bishgaga. I don't understand. Because there's no action, therefore they should be liable, even if they do this by mistake? What does the Rambam actually mean? He says, no. That's not what we're saying. Ve'ulai kavanas harambam lechalek me'edim zomen lechol chayve onshin. Maybe what the Rambam is doing is to distinguish between edim zomen and every other case of liability. De'bechol ha'chayuvim tzarech she'en maisa mechayev. By any other crime, there has to be a deed. You did X, and therefore you're going to be liable. V'hamaisa lo yuchal l'chayev ki'im b'tna'im yidu'im. And whatever action you performed will only incur liability if certain conditions are satisfied, such as she'ev b'mezid, has to be on purpose, u'bahasra, you have to have been warned. But with Edim Zomen, there is no deed that makes you liable. Why are you liable? God sent you liability. It's not really a function of what you did. This is a wild idea. This is a sort of idea that can only be born from the 19th century and onward in terms of halachic thinking. It's one of these Brisker style type of ideas. There's liability that you incur because you committed a crime and therefore you're going to be liable. And then there is liability that you get as if by magic. You caused this person, or theoretically you would have caused this person, to become liable to pay money. And the Torah says, you are now, it's not being transferred from him to you. It's not you committed an act that carries liability. It's you caused him to gain liability, and now it's moving over to you. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's a little bit weird, but you're inheriting from him his liability, as opposed to it being a function of your deed. Even though in the end it's still about what you did, it's about what you said. If you had not said this in Beis Din, it wouldn't have happened. But you're borrowing it from him, so to speak. That's the idea. That's where you got it from. So that's why there's no hasra unnecessary. Because your liability isn't a function of your action. Your liability is a function of you caused him to have this, and now it's rebounding on you. That's the way he's looking at it. And that will also now answer the question of viewing this as mammon instead of as knas. He says, v'kevan after the ellipsis, v'kevan de al achiv hu chiyuv mammon velo knas, this other guy for whom you established liability, you called him a thief, and therefore he has to pay this amount. For him, it was restitution. It was mammon, not knas. Memela gam b'ha'edim hu chiyuv mammon. So when it comes over to the Edim Zomen, It's mamon. It's not knas. What you got from him was his liability, which was restitution liability, not knas liability. You follow? It's one of these things where you can learn this Gemara 3,000 times and never come up with this idea because you're not Rav Chanan Wasserman.
The woman fired the gun. They introduced the bullet.
Yeah.
The bullet's in the world because of them, and it wouldn't have.
Yeah, but it's not a function of their deed. It's a function of the fact that this guy ended up with a verdict against him because of them. But he goes even further, because I would have, if I stopped there, then the question that you'd be thinking about, I know I saw in at least two faces around the table, the question you're thinking about is, that's all well and good if what you incurred for him as an Eid Zomim was mamon. But what if what you incurred for him was kanas? What if you allege that he was a thief and that he should have to pay kefel? Right? Now, that means you will have knas and not mamon. But he says, ve'efsher, it could be, da'afilu chivu hanidon b'knas, even if they got him liability for a knas, mikom makom kevin da'al yidei gmar din na'asem mamon, since, via the verdict, the knas now becomes mamon, mishum hachi havietzla mamon, it becomes mamon for them also. Meaning, once he reaches the point where he's liable and he hasn't acknowledged liability prior to the Gemara Din, it now converts to become mamon for him, and therefore it's mamon for them.
I don't understand that concept. The kefel's the knas.
Yeah.
So how, just because now it's being adjudicated,
because
it
once it
mamon, the only reason why he is paying it because it's a knas.
And the answer is because what happens is, once somebody becomes liable in Beis Din, it's what we call nizgav alav b'milveh. It becomes like a loan now to him. He, when he was on the stand, or not on the stand, he wasn't a witness, when he was in trial in the Beis Din, so it was a knas against him. If at any moment he jumped up and said, before the Edom testified, I'm guilty, I did it, it would have vanished. So now that didn't happen, there's a verdict against him that he owes whatever it is, $20,000, so 10,000 times 2, he owes $20,000. Now it's a debt of his to the Beis Din of $20,000. Not to the Beis Din.
Once it's converted to a judgment, it's just money like anything else.
That's the argument that I'm seeing in Rabbi Chanan here, yeah. Very interesting. Okay. So,
Rabbi,
yeah.
Just clarify, is it money or if it's cost, the money goes to the Beis Din, it doesn't go to...
No, it actually doesn't. It goes to the other party. The question of how that works, do they pay directly or does it go through the Beis Din, is an interesting one.
But whether it's mamon or knas, it still goes to the other party.
Yes, correct. It's not like there's some victim's fund somewhere that now is being enriched as a result of this. No, it's going to the... it's going to their victim. That's true. Okay. Top of Gimel and Aleph.
Why should it go to the victim? That's a good point, actually. Because it's a kanas, but why does the victim benefit from the kanas? The victim gets the restitution.
Yeah.
He's done.
And yet,
so
that's what you do. If you don't like it, go back to last week's parasha.
they have to pay. Do they also pay the
person who they would have hurt? Yeah. Rav Yehuda Marav. Eid Zomim Mishalem Lefi Chelko. So Rav Yehuda says, quoting Rav, the Eid Zomim pays according to his portion. The Gemara does not know what that means. My Mishalem Lefi Chelko. What does that mean? You pay according to your portion. The Gemara is going to give us five different explanations for what this means. First, Ilema Dahai Mishalem Palga, Bahai Mishalem Palga. Maybe what it means is this. If you have two witnesses, right, in your group of witnesses who testified, who were Adam Zomim, so the rule is going to be that each of them pays half, right? He pays chelko, he pays his portion. That's what I would have thought. But the Gemara says, Tanena mishalshin b'mamon ve'ein mishalshin b'makos. The Gemara says, we've learned explicitly that we split up money. We don't split up malkos. That's a basic principle. I skipped a Rashi. I should really do the Rashi. If you look at Rashi, Mishalshin B'mamon, the Rashi is the second line. Mishalshin B'mamon. Im shlosha edim heino arba. If there are three or four witnesses in a set, Mishalshin B'nehem. they split it between them, between the three or four of them. Then they bring you another. I'm sorry, though. I flipped the explanation in Rashi. Mishalshin beinehen means beizdin nasin shlish beinehen elashvosam bepeiron ish lefichelko. Beizdin becomes an agent among them, telling them, okay, you pay this, you pay this, you pay this according to your portion. Inami, alternatively, hay mishalshin lishna be'almahu mechalkin apeiron bein shlashtan. Or it means you divide up the amount between the three of them, or however many of them there are. Either way, the result is the same. However you translate the word mishalshin, whether you read it as Beis Din acts as a shalish, an agent, or you read it as we divide it in thirds, doesn't make a difference for our purposes. The bottom line is, I didn't need Rav to tell me that we're splitting it up evenly.
Why?
Because I already knew that. I had a statement. It said, mishalshin b'mama v'mishalshin b'makos.
Why am I splitting it up evenly?
Among the witnesses, because
yeah,
the...
hear me out. If it's Kasher Zamam,
yeah,
and you're supposed to do to the guy what you tried to do to him,
yeah,
why are you dividing the liability?
Because they did
why
it as a set.
Why should the liability be joint and several? And in the end, you know, okay, amongst themselves, if they divide it, that's fine. Why can't you make the argument that one person is really liable for the whole thing?
Because he couldn't have done it alone. You needed a set. And they identify as a set. Not only that, even if there are three of them, they identified as a set when they came in to testify. They live by a set. They die by the set.
Nice. And they didn't need the third
we're game. Even going to get further, not in this Gemara, but further along, to say that if you have three witnesses who come testify as a set and only two of them are caught as Zomimin, they're not Zomimin. It's the entire set that has to become Zomimin. That's the way we identify them. They're a discrete unit. So that's the first... That's the first approach, is to say what Rav was saying was they each pay a percentage of the verdict, and now we're throwing that out and saying no, because we knew that elsewhere. Rav wouldn't have told me that. Ella, rather, we're on the sixth line, could go into idzom chad minayhu. The deal is that one of them became an aid zomim, de mishalem palga didei. And it's a statement. We're going to throw this out, Ira, so don't ask me that this contradicts what I just told you. He says, what we're talking about is where one of the witnesses became a Zomim, and he's going to pay only half. In other words, two witnesses collectively would have said you're liable for $10,000. Only one of them became an Eid Zomim, so I'd say you pay $5,000. That's the way it works. Switch the word, says that's not true. Torchino just told me. Umi Mishalim, does he really pay? Vatanya ein aid zome mishalim mamon ad shezumu shneim. It doesn't work. Only when the set becomes zomimin. Omar Rava. So Rava gives me a third approach. Baomer edus sheker heyadati. The answer is I'm following our edition, but there's a nice long discussion in the Bach. It's where he admits alone that they lied. So there's a machlokas as to what the case is. I'm going to say it without going into the sources, but if you want to read the Bach in the margin, you can, as well as Tosfos Ba'omer. Tosfos says what we're saying is that in the event that one of them admits that they lied, the admitter pays. It's not really Eid Zomim. This case is not an Eid Zomim case. We're just using the term Eid Zomim, but they're not really Eid Zomim because the set did not become Zomim. It's not a Zomim case. It's just that two witnesses testified about somebody, and then one of them came forward and said, I'm sorry, I feel bad, guilty conscience, I have to admit it, we were lying. We said, okay, fine, you pay your portion. That's the way that the Bach reads this. Tosfos, with some edits from the Bach, reads it differently. He says, no, it's where one witness comes forward and admits that he was lying, taking himself out of the Eidos picture. Then along came two people and said, actually, that set, they were Zomimin. They were with us when they say that the event happened. Now the set became Zomimin, but he already walked away. So the rule is going to be he is out of the picture, and it's the other guy who's going to have to pay.
The whole thing?
No, just his portion. That's what he's saying.
Well, the first guy already paid.
No, he didn't pay anything. According to this, only the non-admitter is paying. He took himself out of the Eidos picture. In other words, he testified.
He recanted.
He testified, and they were hearing the case, and then he says, you know, I'm sorry, I gotta walk away from this. This isn't right.
So then is after a decision?
No decision yet. Yeah.
No harm, no foul.
So he walks away, and then along came two and said, wait a minute, we were with you when you say this happened. And the guy who admitted it says, good thing I had a conscience. The other guy is going to have to pay his portion.
Why?
That's why Tosus reads it.
You only have one Eid left. Why would he have to pay anything?
Because the two of them testified together in Beis Din, and that's what the Zomen are combating here.
But he recanted.
Yes.
So that this the testimony is now only one out of two.
So I would argue that there's no such thing as true recanting when you're dealing with Eidus. We have a principle. Kevin Shehigit Shuvenu Choseru Magid. Once you've testified, you can't testify a second time. There's a rule for that in secular courts, right? It's not double jeopardy, but it's something else. So maybe that's why we view them as a set still to become Eidim Zomim, even though he admitted.
Okay.
Maybe. I didn't want to get too far into the Bach versus Tosfos, because there's harder stuff we have to see. But Rava says the cases where he admits alone that they lied. If you don't like Tosfos, just go back to the Bach. That's fine. Oh, but it's the next line in the Gemara anyway. I'm just anticipating one line ahead. The Gemara says, Kol Kamine, does he have the ability to back out? Kevin Shehigit Shuvin Achozer Umagid. This is the problem, because I prepare this shiur on Friday, and it's Tuesday, so I vaguely remember what I learned. So you can't back out. Ela Baomer He Adnu Vehuzamnu Bebez Din Ploni. So, all right, attempt number four. It's where the guy testifies alone that he and another guy became Eidim Zomim in another Beis Din. So the rule is that he's only going to have to pay his portion. That's what Rav is saying. To which the Gemara says, that's not true. Come on, who is that going to be like? Delok Rabbi Akiva, that's against Rabbi Akiva. Because Rabbi Akiva said it's a knas. Dik Rabbi Akiva ha'omar af eno mishalim al pi atzmo. Rabbi Akiva says you don't pay based on your own admission. Ella, rather, last approach. Ba'omer he'adnu v'huzamnu be'bezdin ploni v'chuyavnu mamon. He says, what happened was, this guy showed up in court, and he said, we were found liable in another bezdin as Adam Zoman, and they obligated us to pay, at which point it converted to be mamon, not knas. That's the idea. So sanka daita chamina, I would have thought kevin de lachavre lo matzi mechayev lei, since he can't obligate the other guy, iunami lo mechayev, he doesn't become liable either. Ka mash malan, and is teaching me that it's not so. He's liable for his percentage of this as one of the alleged Adam Zomim. What I mean when I say that he can't incriminate the other guy is, he shows up in Beis Din. There are no witnesses other than him. He says, crazy story. My friend and I, we were living in another city 5 years ago, and yeah, we just, on a lark, we just figured we were going to testify against somebody. We were drunk. It was a party, whatever it was. We went to Beis Din. We testified. Then two other people showed up. They ruined the party. They said, Imanu Yisem. We became Zelman, and we were supposed to pay, and we never paid. We skipped town, and now I'm coming to you and acknowledging it. So Beis Din looks at him and says, you, we believe, in terms of yourself, but you have no ability to say that about the other guy. You're just one guy. Like, why would... Aside from the fact that on your own words, you're a liar to Beis Din. But aside from that, you're only one guy. You don't have the ability. You have the ability to do this to yourself, right? A human being has, in halacha and in civil law as well, the ability to say, I owe somebody money. Sure, why not? You can create an artificial debt anytime. You know, it's a little bit of a weird way to do it, but you can. So for himself, sure, you pay half. But you can't make the other guy pay half. That's not happening.
I don't understand the case. I thought they were already found liable. They already owed the money.
He says, this is all his say-so. He says, I was found to be an Eid Zomim in this other place. I walk into Beis Din in West Hampstead.
There's no outstanding, you know, Beis Din judgment against them to collect money.
No. There's no record whatsoever. All that happened was, I walked into the Beis Din, and I said, Ira and I lived in Toronto. And in Toronto, we testified against somebody. We began, yeah. And I say, we were found guilty, and we were supposed to pay, and we never paid. And now here we are in town, and I feel like we should be paying. And the Beis Din looks at me.
Why are you coming to court?
Because I
want to
do this
part,
right.
Why
it's what he did. It's a practical case. It's not. Yeah.
Why would somebody
do it? He wants to do it in Beis Din.
He's already liable to pay.
I understand what you're saying, but that doesn't change the facts of what we're talking about. Let me say it a little differently. It doesn't matter. You can present the case as not being in front of Beis Din. He walked into this room during the shiur. Same result. Doesn't matter. So that's our story. Okay. That brings us to the difficult Mishnah. All of this in order to get to the Mishnah, we've got not enough time for it, but we're going to start on it at any rate and figure this out to a certain extent. So, remember what we said in the very beginning, right? A man pays the ksuba in the event that they get divorced or in the event that he dies first. That's the basic principle. So the question that the Mishnah addresses is, what if a guy shows up in Beis Din and said, or not a guy, two guys show up in Beis Din and they say, this fellow divorced his wife and never paid the ksuba. And then they turn out to be Zomamin. What do they owe to the husband? What is the Kasher Zomam? Don't tell me the Kasher Zomam is that they have to pay him the ksuba, because it could be he wasn't going to keep the ksuba anyway. If the marriage ended in a divorce, or if he dies first, he's not getting the ksuba money. They didn't cost him the ksuba. Right? You follow? So what did they cost him? They cost him maybe the value of his potential getting of the ksuba. This is where we get into the options territory. Maybe that's what they caused him. So take a look at the Mishnah.
Doesn't she have to produce her ksuba to prove that she didn't get paid? Because wouldn't he have?
No. She doesn't do anything. This guy is the Adam Zoman are taking care of everything for her. There is no requirement that a woman produce her ksuba document in order to receive it. That's a means of proof. Okay. So Mishnah says, "Me'idin anu es ish ploni shegiresh es ishto v'lanasan laksubasa." They testify that Reuven divorced his wife, not Shimon. Reuven divorced his wife, and he did not pay her the ksuba. Somebody used to Reuven and Shimon. The v'halo bein hayom uvein lamachar sofo liten laksubasa. At some point, he very possibly is going to end up paying her the ksuba, whether it's today or whether it's tomorrow. So, omdin kama adam rotze litein biksuba sashel zu. What we do is we evaluate. I'm just reading this and translating it straight right now, but the Gemara is going to have to revisit this. We evaluate how much a third party would have paid for this guy's ksuba, meaning his rights to the ksuba. She'im nis almana o nis garsha, such that if she were to be widowed, or the marriage were to end in divorce, ve'imesa yirashena bala. And if she dies, her husband will inherit from her. If you understood that line in the Mishnah, you've had way too much of whatever that is. There's no way that line didn't make any sense. It was good. It was going the right way. And then it veered off at the end. The Gemara has two problems with the wording in the Mishnah. And here I gave you on the sheet an outline of it, because I figured that might make it easier for us to follow. Yes, it is a gamble.
It's a gamble.
Yeah. So the wording in the Mishnah I translated straight, right? Evaluate how much someone would pay for his ksuba rights, that if she were widowed or divorced, and then it suddenly stops mid-sentence and it says, and if she dies, her husband inherits her. I don't know what that sentence is doing there. So we have two fundamental problems. Problem number one is that in the event that his testimony had actually worked, the husband would not have lost the value of his ksuba rights, right? Meaning, if they succeeded, he would have paid the ksuba, right? So let's put numbers on this, okay? Let's pretend for a minute that the ksuba is, we're just going to say $200. 200 zuz, $200, right? That's not what it is. The 200 zuz is way more than $200, but I don't care. $200 is what he would have now had to pay for the ksuba, right? Let's say the value of his rights to the ksuba, let's pretend, is $50, right? Someone is willing to gamble $50 that she is going to predecease the husband. So what exactly did he lose here? It sounds like from the Mishnah, it sounds like they cost him $50. Right? That's what the wording in the Mishnah, until it got to that weird, and if she dies, her husband inherits her, evaluate how much someone would pay for his ksuba rights. Right? That means $50. But they weren't costing him $50. They were costing him $200. Do you see what I'm saying? It's not true that they were costing him $50. You have to figure out how do you quantify what they cost him? It's not $200, because he was likely out $200 anyway. In most universes, he's out $200. It's not $50.
You think it's $200? Because he owes him an
assessment at the point of where they were in I guess marriage, or how old the person was at the time.
It's like an actuary thing.
Yeah, it's an actuary. Yeah.
Right, but it's not. Even when the actuary sits down and says, this is the value of, you know, I'm assessing based on the fact that you've been married for X number of years, you're this age, you live in this area, you work at this job, takes all the factors into consideration and says, here is a reasonable assessment of the value of your rights to the ksuba, that's still not what he lost. He lost $200.
That's true, because they're saying he's liable for the ksuva now. Because,
but it's not $200 either, because he didn't.
He's divorced, then he owes a ksuva.
But the thing is, he was eventually going to pay out the $200, probably, ask the actuary what the percentages were, but it was likely he was going to pay the $200 at some point. So you didn't cost him a full $200 either. It's a different number. It's a different number. And the Gemara is going to give you three different versions of what that number is. You follow? Okay, so let's see what we can do here. We got 3 minutes. We can get this. Not really, but we'll get something out of it. So, Ketzad Shamin, the Gemara asks, so how exactly do you evaluate this? Amar Rav Chisda bibaal. So, Rav Chisda's approach is to say, you evaluate it based on his. What does his mean? So the way Rashi explains his, and I brought it on the sheet, you can see it's a nice long Rashi, but he says, it's a lesser, what I wrote on the sheet, it's a lesser likelihood of receiving the ksuba, but better terms during the marriage and in claiming the ksuba. Meaning, when you evaluate his, the word rights isn't really the word, but the value of his claim to the ksuba. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, the value of his claim is less than the value of her claim, because she's the one who's likely to get the money in the end. However, during the marriage, he is able to use the land that has been assigned for the ksuba. Mm-hmm. Classically, the rule was that he would take real property and say, the ksuba is going to be paid out of this piece of land. So he can use the land during the marriage. She can't. So that bumps up his ksuba value, or the value of his share of the ksuba a little bit. And since he's holding it, in the event that the marriage ends with her death, he doesn't have to go to Beis Din to claim that land as his. He just got it. As opposed to if she wants the ksuba, she's going to have to take him to Beis Din, or his heirs to Beis Din. So therefore, that bumps up his the value of his share a little bit. That's his, according to Rashi. Hers, on the other hand, is simply the greater likelihood of receiving the ksuba. So we can pretend that we understand how to value this. I mean, whatever. But let's pretend for the moment that that means that in the $200 ksuba, his is worth $80 and hers is worth $120, just to put numbers on it. So Rav Papa says, we go with his. That's what we work with. We're going to go with his 80. That's what they have to pay. That's Rav Chisda's approach. Rav Nassim Bar Oshia Omer Beisha. Rav Nassim Bar Oshia says no, hers. Now, the problem with saying hers, you know, it's not going to work. I mean, this is not going to... I can say it to you outside, and the next time we can see how it fits in with the language of the Mishnah and the Gemara. Maybe that makes sense? Do that? Mm-hmm. So Rav Nassar Bar Oshia says, hers, meaning the value of the ksuba is what they pay him, minus the odds that she is the one who's going to collect the ksuba. Which, to me, makes the most sense out of all of this, right? What did they really cost him? They cost him $200 that he had to pay, except that it was likely that he was going to have to pay the $200 anyway. So subtract from the $200 the odds that he was going to have to pay this off anyway, and that's what you really cost him. You cost him $80. You didn't cost him $200. You follow? That's from Nassar Bar Oshia. That, I think, is the clearest read. However, Rav Papa is going to add a third possibility, and the third possibility is that, as I wrote on the sheet, there is property that she brings into the marriage. It's called Nechse Malog. He is able to use that property during the marriage. If you claim that he divorced her, then he's also losing that property. He's losing the Nechse Malog. So we're going to tag that on as well. You're going to have to pay for the value of the ksuba minus what her share of it, her option or whatever, is worth, plus Nechse Malog.
But is that part of the ksuba?
No, but it is and it's not. I can explain that next week. It is part of the ksuba in the sense that it's with the part of the terms of the ksuba, but technically if there were no Nechse Malog, the ksuba would still be going forward. It's tied to the ksuba is probably the best way to say it. So God willing, next week we will do this.